Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's trigger warnings are suicide and explicit sexual content.
And then we have a cute little, it's a message from TikTok, and it's from Love from Kiz. Says, hi, I'm such a huge fan and love your podcast. I love how it feels like I'm just talking with some friends about the newest read. You guys seem like so much fun and I can't wait for the next season.
Thank you. That's so sweet.
Also, it's the new season. Hey.
And this week we're going to be telling Riley all about Gothicana by Runix. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I give it 4, but this is a reread for me. I read it like 2022, I think. And it was my first gothic dark romance. And I liked it then and I like it now.
I gave it a 5-star. I think this is such a good dark romance academia book. Like, it has everything perfectly tied into one. And I think she did a really good job of writing this.
I will say I read this right after I finished Nocticadia, which I gave a 5-star. They were very, very similar. There was some loose ends that didn't get tied up in this book. So for that reason, I gave it a 4.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I did think that there were some loose ends too, but she kind of a little bit ties it up in the very end of the book, but at the same time, she doesn't answer those questions.
Yeah, I don't like that.
So it's like, that's my whole point. I hate it.
But I think it's like to the reader's like discretion of like what they believe too, right?
But like, tell me what happened.
Fair. Our main male character, his name is Vad. He is 7 years old and is warned of someone with purple eyes. We fast forward and we're in our female main character's point of view now. Her name is Corvina, and she's a weird homeschooled girl who the townspeople whisper about alongside her mother. They both have raven black hair and violet purple eyes, and everyone says that they have to be witches because they do, like, they practice tarot, they use crystals for like healing stuff, so everyone like talks about them. And they live in like a cute little cottage in the woods.
She's a homeschooled jungle freak.
Corvina receives a letter in the mail to University of Varenmore. She has never heard of this university since she was homeschooled, and she's way past the normal undergrad age. She's now 21, but she accepts because it's free tuition and stuff. Like, they pay for everything. And she packs her bags and goes. When she arrives, it's at an old spooky castle, and the taxi driver drops her off and tells her to keep her wits about her because it's haunted and a lot of strange things happen there. Shortly after arriving at the university, she meets Jade and learns from this girl that rumors about the castle are true, and they get along really well, so they decide to be dorm roommates.
If I was getting out of my cab and the cab driver was like, watch out, girl. Scary here. Scary, scary. I'd probably say, oh, I'm not gonna stay then.
Take me back to my cottage in the woods.
Yeah, not for me.
She gets a quick tour of the university and it's amazing. So all old gothic architecture, moody, like perfect. That's what I put. I put perfect.
Beautiful.
As she's walking back to where her dorm room is, a boy warns her about rooming with Jade because last year Jade's roommate jumped off the roof of the building and died.
Okay. That could have just been that person's own mental health, sir.
Or maybe Jade was just horrible to live with.
Yeah. She's like, God, I hate my roommate.
I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt.
As they unpack their stuff, Corvina asks if it's true what the kid said, and Jade admits that it is, but she's not sure why the girl did it because she seemed happy. The only rule that she broke was that she hooked up with a professor. So Jade's like, I don't know why she would have done that.
The scandal.
Jade explains that sleeping with faculty is their most strict rule at the school, but it also technically didn't apply when Allison jumped because the professor that she slept with, Mr. Deverell, was still finishing his student doctorate. So he was doing student teaching while also being a student.
I mean, you would think that would still count, though.
That's what I said. I'm like, that's faculty.
You have intentions to be a teacher there.
Yeah.
You can't just fuck him.
But Jade tells Corvina that he is very handsome, very mysterious, and he has a stark streak of gray hair in his midnight black hair. So it's just like one premature, like, gray swoop in it.
Ah, oh, I love
Sweeney
that.
Todd.
Hot.
I picture McDreamy. It's like from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh. McDreamy's Patrick Dempsey, right?
Yes.
Okay, I have an opinion. I have an opinion. I fucking hate McDreamy. I hated him. He was the fucking worst one on. He wasn't the worst one, but he was one of the sucky ones. I hated him.
I've never even watched that show, so.
And he wasn't even the hottest one.
No, it's all
McSteamy
about McSteamy.
Was way hotter.
McSteamy.
He was way hotter.
No, I just picture Sweeney Todd. He's got the same hair as Sweeney Todd.
Oh, yeah.
As the girls put away their things and talk about boys and their age and everything, Corvina hears a voice as the light flickers in the corner of the room. But she's not surprised by the voice because it's a voice that she's heard her whole life. She calls the voice Mo, and as far as she can remember, he's always guided her and hasn't led her astray. So, like, she'll go to do something, and then in the back of her head, Mo will be like, that's not a good decision. So she doesn't do it, and it works out for her.
I need a Mo.
She does as he says, and she cleanses the space, and Jade is absolutely fascinated by, like, her little ritual that she's doing. And then she pulls out her tarot cards before they get to bed. But when she goes to pull back the cover, she notices only one card on the deck is face up, and it's the death card.
Spooky.
It's 2 hours before midnight, and she's woken up by a strange melody, so she decides to see where it leads her. She lights a candle, puts it on a candlestick, because, you know, the vibes have to be gothic and scary and spooky. And she leaves her room. She's also wearing a nightgown.
A nightgown? Like a muumuu?
Yeah, but I think it's a sexy muumuu.
I don't think it is. She's a homeschool girl.
Oh, true. Go off, girl. Wear your muumuu.
She follows the melody up 6 flights of stairs and notices that it's coming from a closed door, which she presumes to be the attic. She opens it to see a beautiful man playing a piano with his eyes closed. She stands there and stares at him, and when he opens his eyes, she tries to hide behind the door, but he's like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I saw you. Like, leave. What are you doing? So she runs down the staircase, and she kind of hears him behind her, but he doesn't follow her. So she stops and looks up, and that's when she notices the gray streak of hair.
Hot teacher.
Hot.
It's been a couple weeks, and Jade runs up to her in the courtyard in a panic, saying that she forgot to tell Corvina it's the year of the black ball, and every year the black ball is held, someone goes missing. We learn that it's held every 5 years for the last 100 years or so, and 20 people have gone missing in total. It doesn't matter if they're students, teachers, or townspeople. They get settled in English class, and everyone stops as soon as he walks in. It's Mr. Deverell. Vad Deverell.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that was our main male character when he was 7, and he was told to stay away from someone with purple eyes. She has purple eyes.
No. The prof, or like the little thing, was to find the girl with purple eyes.
Oh, find them. I thought it said stay away from.
No.
Find her.
My bad.
Corvina broke their gaze again and looked down at her notebook, her chest heaving. She realized it was possibly the first time in her life she was feeling lust-induced by an actual man and not a fictional character. She said, this guy's hot.
There's sexual tension between the two, and then the class ends. She's up before dawn in the morning when she hears Mo whisper in her ear not to fret. And she's kind of like, what the fuck? Because she has like a nightmare. And he's like, all good.
That would scare me, I feel like. I'd be like, I'm not good.
She decides, since she can't go back to sleep, that she's going to go take a walk in the woods around the university. And as she's walking, she follows a crow through the woods to a lake. And she, as she takes in the view of the lake, she's startled by Mr. Deverell. She's just following crow. crows. She's just hanging out, feeding them biscuits.
I love that for her.
Me too.
Me too. I want to be a crow's friend so bad.
Oh, same.
He tells her that she should be more careful out in the woods. And as they stare at each other for a moment, she asks if the rumors about him are true. Like, she has no social etiquette at all. She's just like, do you fuck that girl? Is that true?
You're very unusual, Miss Clem. Almost enough to interest me. He turned his eyes back to her. And let's just say that's not a good thing. Stay out of the woods, little crow. Your feathery friends can't help you if you're dead.
Spooky.
Why would you say that?
And also, Corvina means crow.
Yeah.
Cute.
He leaves and she kind of stays behind until she hears a voice that isn't Mo's. It's light, feminine, and it scares her since she's only ever heard his. So she takes off. She's like, oh, fuck no.
Yeah, that's scary as hell.
She hurries back to her dorm room and a mean girl named Roy. Yes, her name is Roy. R-O-Y.
Roy.
Roy. Tells her that since she's new, she'll remind her that student-teacher relationships are forbidden. And Corvina's like, what are you talking about? And Roy lets her know that more than one person saw both her and Mr. Deverell coming out of the woods. And it would only take someone going to the administrator to get her kicked out.
Maybe Roy's a bitch because she has a dumb fucking name.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. Yeah.
Corvina quickly goes to her room and journals everything that she felt regarding the new voice because she thinks it has to be important for her to actually hear it. It's been a week since her and Mr. Deverell saw each other in the woods, but he's literally everywhere. Everywhere she turns, that motherfucker's right there watching. In class, she gets distracted and it's by flickering lights again in the corner. So he pauses the whole class and is like, what are you doing? What are you looking at? Care to entertain everyone?
Oh, how mean.
And then he lets her know that she could stay after class. She does as he says, but he doesn't address her right away. So they're the only two in the room. And he's just like writing stuff down as she just stands there watching him, which is like a power move. I'd be terrified.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would be shaking in my boots.
That's kind of hot. I don't know why. Like, yeah, go ahead. Ignore me.
Jenna just drops to her knees.
You talked me into it.
I feel like I would just stand there for a second and like start to slowly walk out.
Just walk out backwards.
She quietly watched as he read, tapping the pen on the side, a pen that looked tiny in his large hands with long, skilled fingers. She wondered how those fingers would feel sifting through her hair, stroking the side of her face, sliding over the skin of her neck down to her breasts. Playing her like the piano she'd seen him work on that first night.
Oh,
hot. I love a good man hand.
Yeah, it's hot.
Ugh. Men have like the best hands and like forearms.
Yeah, put them in me.
Both of them.
Fist me.
Fist me.
He lets her know she shouldn't be looking at her teacher like that. And I put, this girl has balls, because she tells him that he shouldn't be giving students nicknames like he gave her because he calls her Little Crow.
I mean, she's not wrong.
Yeah, no.
I'm so delusional. I'd be like, I love you. What are we?
Do you like me? Do you like me?
Just as he's about to reply, she sees the light flicker in the corner of the room again, but it takes shape into a silhouette.
No.
She's like, I'm gonna throw up. I'm gonna throw up. And it disappears immediately. He demands to know why she's so distracted by the corner of the class, and she says that it's nothing. He tells her not to get distracted in class because then he has to reprimand her and he doesn't want anyone else's attention on her.
Corvina bit the inside of her cheek. Why? Because you're bewitching, he murmured, his eyes roving over her entire face. And I don't want others fantasizing about you during my class. Others? She asked, her heart pounding. He fantasized about her? Steer clear of me, little crow, he muttered, his eyes piercing, flaying her open. You might be a luring siren, but I'm no ordinary sailor. I'm a mad pirate, and I'm trying to resist your call. If I land on your shores, I will plunder and take away everything worth having. Be very careful giving me those eyes. Okay, I'd be like, what?
A pirate? Plunder me.
He dismisses her from class, and she is hella soaked and distracted for the rest of the day now. Later on, she meets Jade and a couple other people, and she starts asking questions about the rooms at the top of the towers. She asks about the woods and kind of just like the grounds in general. Jade tells her why the woods are haunted, and it's from when the school was founded 100 years ago. It involves sacrifices of the townsfolk, and then a group of students finding out and following the people who used to sacrifice the townspeople into the woods and slaughtering all of them.
Jesus.
And the night that those people got got slaughtered was the night of the first black ball. Later that night, before bed, the light flickers happen again and start to take shape. And then the light feminine voice whispers to Corvina to find her. Again, that's so scary.
I'd say, I'm going home, not staying here.
The next morning, she gets ready and leaves for the woods again. And she ends up stumbling on an old building with a graveyard behind it. And it has 15 headstones. She feeds her little crow friends, because she has more than the one now, and starts looking around until she finds some debris. And there's also a newer looking tarp inside where all this garbage is. And when she lifts it, she discovers a piano under it. So she puts the tarp back, because she only knows one person who plays the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So she puts the tarp back and heads for the castle. She goes to the library to get more books for her psychology paper. And when she pulls one off the shelf, she's met with eyes behind it. And when she drops the book, it's a young boy, and he warns her that the slayers are here.
Oh my god. I'd be like, I just fucking started.
This is what pisses me off. We'll discuss it at the end.
Okay.
I will say, this little boy pisses me the fuck off. Not at the boy, at the author.
Yeah.
Why?
I'll tell you at the end. Cliffhanger.
She bends to pick up the book, and he runs away when they hear footsteps approaching. A pair of boots step into her vision, and she knows who it is before she even looks up. And as she looks up, he offers his hand, so she takes it.
Her small hand felt dwarfed in his larger grip, sending her pulse skittering across her body. She felt a gentle tug, and then she was upright, her body flush against his, her free breasts pressed into his tight torso, her stomach nestling the bulge she had spied moments ago, her hand in his grip, his eyes roving over her face. In the library?
Her free breasts.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Free the nip.
She's just not wearing a bra?
She doesn't wear bras at our panties.
Me neither. There you go.
She realizes he might do this with any other girl that he thinks is interesting. So again, girl has balls, and she's like, did you do this with Alyssa?
And Alyssa's dead, right?
That's the one that jumped off the roof, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like even more ballsy because she's dead. So it's like...
What if he just starts crying? Like, oh my god,
don't bring her up. He lets her know that was literally one time, and it was before he knew that she was a student. Sir, what else would she be?
Liar. Liar.
So now she starts to question if Alyssa lied to Jade when he runs his nose up her neck, and they both agree that they should not be doing this.
His face came closer, along with his whispered demand. Stop me. Her lips parted. Fuck, he cursed, his mouth inches away from hers, hovering. She inhaled, her chest pressing deeper into him just as he exhaled, exchanging the same breath of charged air between them, the static pulsing between her legs, throbbing, making her wet and swollen and needy. And needy!
He tells her that he needs one taste and starts to move his hand up her hip, moving her skirt up. He learns that she doesn't wear underwear, and she's hella soaked right now. He rubs his finger on her clit and then pulls his hand away.
Eyes on her, he rubbed his wet finger over her lower lip slowly, coating it with her moistness. Ew. And then leaded forward, licking the juice he'd smeared there. Her walls clenched. Ambrosia, he muttered, giving her lower lip another soft lick. Her head dizzy with the sensations, their noses brushed, chests heaving, his pupils blown wide, his mouth parted with hers.
They pull away when they hear a crash a couple aisles down, and he tells her that this can't happen again, and then he leaves. Later on, Corvina and Jade go to the woods with a couple of the guys to hang out, and Corvina only goes to steer them away from the graveyard because she feels really protective over it, like she doesn't want them knowing it's there. As they walk, she hears the feminine whisper again, and then Troy says, oh fuck. They see the dilapidated structure, and there's a silhouette inside. They all panic, and Jax grabs her hand while they run away. When they get back to the school, they're still holding hands, and Mr. Deverell sees.
He's gonna be pissed.
We are in an unknown POV. They pretty much say that she shouldn't be at the school. They've been watching her, and they've left her alone, but the purple eyes see too much and more than they've wanted. It's time to keep her away.
Oh, spooky.
She wakes up from another nightmare of her mom, and as she slips her shoes on, she grabs her candlestick to go to the woods and visit the ruins where she feeds the crows. Once she arrives, Vad is there and not happy that she's shown up. She tells him that she couldn't sleep, so she decided to come here since it's peaceful. And then she pulls out her tarot cards, and his interest is piqued, but he just tries to fix the piano that's sitting under the tarp.
Just out in the woods.
So the piano was his grandfather's, so he just like tries to restore it.
As if there's no other fucking place to do it.
I know.
How's he gonna carry a piano?
How did it get out there?
I don't know. Did he put it there?
Probably.
His granddaddy did.
Yeah, he can't lift up a piano and carry it back to campus.
True.
Figure it out.
He's like, nah, I'm just going to fix it here in the woods.
He asks her if her and Jax are friends who hold hands, and he's a little jealous. He walks up to her and says that they can't happen. Bad things happen to girls that he sees, and then there's also the student-teacher rule. When she looks at him a certain way, it makes him want things, and again, can't happen. And he's very adamant. And she's like, what kind of things? Tell me.
If things can't happen, let her fuck Jax.
Yeah.
Things like my fist in your hair and my tongue in your mouth. I just saw fist and I was like, up your ass. He told her harshly, the lines of his face strained. Things like fucking you in front of the boy who held your hand just to tell him you'll never be his. Things like bending you over my desk after class and telling you to wrap your lips around my cock like you do with your pencil.
Sir. It's working on me.
She is hella soaked and tries to tell him what he feels is just lust, but he tells her no, it's madness. She lightly touches his lips with her fingers and tells him if it's madness to just drown her in it. And then he kisses her.
Charlotte rolled her eyes.
Drown me in the madness. Shut up.
After what feels like forever kissing, she makes a noise and it has him pulling away with a look of regret. She's now super embarrassed and tells him that she knows it will never happen again, and she leaves. It's been a couple weeks and she's pretty much managed to avoid him, and she goes to the admin wing to mail a letter, but she learns that it's too late for mail, so it doesn't go out again until like 2 weeks from that day. She begs the kid and the admin wing to have someone take it because it's urgent, and he says that he can't help her. Mr. Deverell walks in that moment and says that he can take her to town and drop it off. She asks if that's allowed, and he says, yes, it is. Like, I'll go tell whoever it was that he needs to tell. As they drive, she thanks him again and calls him Mr. Deverell, but he tells her that when they're alone, she can call him Vad.
Vaddy, baby.
She asks what his name means, and he tells her it means untamed. And she's like, you don't seem untamed. But he's like, you have no idea.
I'm a bad boy.
She stands up for herself because, again, girl has balls, and she says, stop playing games. Make up your mind. What do you want from me? But he changes the subject, asking who the letter's for, and she confides in him that it's for her mom. She's unavailable in a psychiatric institution. They then talk about their family a little bit until they approach the post office. He drops her off and tells her that he'll pick her up in 1 hour. She ends up talking to Miss Remy, the post office worker, about the school history while she waits. She learns that the townsfolk stay out of the woods and never go out on a full moon. Just then, a clap of thunder sounds and lightning strikes, and Mrs. Remy tells her that she better get going to school. It's a full moon tonight, so she shouldn't be out after dark.
Corvina gets in Vad's car, and he's like, we gotta get back quick. Storms are coming. As they drive back up the mountain, they chit-chat about the tea Mrs. Remy spilled, and he tells her that the graves at the ruins are empty. Then the storm picks up, and he's like, I have to pull over or we'll crash and go down the mountain. Because they had to, like, go down the mountain. The school's on top of the mountain. It's a windy mountain road. It's storming. They're in his, like, he drives, like, a muscle car, like a classic Mustang or something.
That doesn't surprise me. I feel like that's on brand.
He finds a spot to pull over and he parks his car. As they sit in silence, there's some obvious sexual tension, and he blurts out that he can't get attached. He has too much to worry about, and he's getting hungrier for her every day. But then he's like, we could do this once. And then after, it goes back to normal. And she's like, okay, I can do that. So they're not on campus.
But can you, Vad? Can you do that?
No.
I don't think you can.
But he's like, just this once. I need a taste.
He's thinking with his dick.
And big keep in dick. Mind that Corvina, she was a homeschool jungle freak. Like, her first kiss was with Vad, like, the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look at her. She's like, yeah, I can do that. I can have no feelings.
She asks if he'll regret it after, and he says no, and he never regretted the kiss. He only regretted having to end it. Because she was very self-conscious that they kissed, and then he avoided her for a few days. So she's like, don't do that again. She straddles him as he licks up her neck, and she grinds down on him with just the fabric of her panties rubbing against his pants. So she is wearing panties at this
point. Probably because she had to go to town.
Yeah.
She had to dress up.
I thought you didn't like wearing underwear. He gritted out against her neck, his other hand going under her skirt to trace the cotton of her panties. Doesn't mean I don't wear them, she moaned as his teeth worked over her lobe. I just like going without some days. Fuck. He pulled down her braid. And here I was, thinking about you going bare with all those salivating little boys around you. You're not that much older. She ran her hand over his shoulder and up his neck into his hair, touching that distinctive white streak she wanted to touch for a long time. Old enough to make you come like a firecracker around my cock. Sir,
he's like 26. She's 21. He's literally not that bad. Much older than her.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
I'd be like, prove it.
Like a firecracker.
He cups her over her panties and presses down on her clit, making her see stars, and then she silently thanks the birth control gods that this won't end up with any consequences.
He wrapped his fist around the fabric between her legs and twisted it up, the pressure of it mashing right into her clit with such force she knew it would be swollen after.
Oh. He's like, wedgie.
Give her like a rock burn.
Gotcha. Her eyes closed of their own accord, head falling back as his lips trailed down her neck, over her chest, his breath falling right on her engorged nipple. It strained farther toward the warmth, needing it, wanting to be submerged in it.
Drowning that pussy.
He keeps on rubbing her panties against her, and then he flicks her nipple with his tongue, and she comes undone. He's like, I'm clean, I have a vasectomy, are you down? And she's like, yes, but also, I'm a virgin.
Of course she is.
Every time I think of a vasectomy, I think of the Office episode where he's like, sip zap, sip zap, sip zap, sip zap.
Where he just keeps getting vasectomies and then he gets them reversed.
Yeah. The heat in his eyes flared as he sank his middle finger inside her, her wet inner walls clenching around him in relief. You chose the wrong guy for your first time, little crow. He, like, pressured her. I mean, he didn't, like, pressure her, but he was like, come on, you down? You picked her. He murmured to her, pushing in another finger, stretching her out as she breathed through her mouth. What? She asked softly, her fingers flexing in his thick hair. But it's too late now. He scissored his fingers inside her, eliciting a moan from deep within her. I'm gonna fuck you so raw you'll never get me out. This time is mine. This pussy is mine. For now, Corvina reminded him in a whimper. His response was to pull his fingers out and slap her pussy, stinging it enough to make wetness gush out.
This is the first time anybody's ever touched her vagina and he just slapped her.
Yeah.
You little virgin.
I also like how she's like, for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that she said that.
I can't get over it. You chose the wrong guy.
What? He orders her to take his dick out, and she obeys, and she is shocked at how large he is.
Obviously.
He tells her to sit up a little, and he adjusts himself at her entrance and then slams up into her.
Absolutely not.
He tells her to look at him, so she does, and he says she has magic eyes and a magic pussy. When she starts to get tired from being on top, he flips them around and gets out of the car and pushes her down on her back in the seat while he's fucking her, and he's standing in the rain, which was so hard to picture, but he, like, gets out of the car, stands in the rain, pushes her back.
Yeah, there's like a steering wheel, there's a console.
Yeah.
What a first time.
As he's fucking her relentlessly, she hears Mo's voice in her head telling her that Vad is important. And then out loud, she's like, Mo? And Vad is like, who the fuck is Mo?
Mo, what are you doing here?
He's like inside of her and she's like, Mo? I would have been like, more?
Mo dick. Hurry up.
Moan.
She says Mo is no one, and this aggravates him, so he fucks her hard and fast until they both climax, and then he's like, you'll be sore tomorrow. Romantic. The rain stops long enough for them to drive back to campus, and now everything will go back to the way it was. But Vad still wants to know who the fuck Mo is. And this is eating him up.
Yeah, he's gonna think about that for a very long time.
2 weeks later, and Corvina is finally not sore anymore. 2 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, she was a virgin that just got it annihilated.
Yeah.
By a giant wiener.
Vad ignores her and she ignores him back. As she sits with her friends for lunch, Troy tells everyone that he heard that they're opening up the vault, which is where the Slayers first did their dark rituals, and the school wants to turn the space into a rec room, which is insane.
Yeah,
that is crazy. So, like, people died there, and they're like, let's use that room.
Throw a couple pool tables in there, it's fine.
Let's make it fun.
Data's like, the black ball is in 2 weeks. The timing is just weird. So she thinks the school is up to something. They're opening the vault. The black ball is coming up soon. Things are weird. Just then, Corvina feels Vad's eyes on her, and she looks up to see him watching her, and she is sitting awfully close to Jax.
Oh, no.
He finally looks away and she finishes eating. Then she notices a new professor that she hasn't seen before and asks who she is. And Troy tells her that's Dr. Harbour. She's in the history department and her and Dr. Deverell had a thing a while back. And she's like, oh, cool. Are they still together? And Troy is like, why do you care? And Corvina's just like, oh, my God, I don't care.
Yeah, she's calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah. Troy warns her that Dr. Deverell is dangerous and just to stay away from him. She heads to the library and Jax tags along. They split up while she peruses the shelves for the books she wants to check out. She picks out a couple of romance novels, and on her way back, a hand grabs her, dragging her to a secluded aisle of books, and Vad's mouth is suddenly on hers, kissing her wildly.
After consuming her, devouring her, ravishing her for long, long minutes, he pulled back, letting her come up for air, his mercury eyes flashing as he gripped her face. "He fucked you yet?" he muttered. The question against her lips, flicking the corner with a soft lick at the end. He's so insecure.
And then she gets pissed and she's like, you fuck me, then you ignore me, and then you corner me and act like you have some right to know that information.
Tell him.
Yep.
He completely bypassed her words. Has anyone else been in that pussy? Oh my God, he's annoying. Corvina glared at him. As many as have been on your cock, she pointed out, pushing against him. Now let me go before Jax comes looking for me. He leaned forward, the danger rippling off his body, crashing into hers, making her push back into the shelf. He wants you. Corvina stayed silent, shooting daggers at him with her eyes, her heart crashing in her chest. He came closer, planting a soft kiss on her nose piercing. He can't have you. She's not your property.
Then he's like, who's Mo? And she's absolutely furious now and tells him to let her go. He kisses her again and then is like, wipe your lipstick off of me. And she tells him to wipe it off himself and storms away.
Go, girl.
And later on, she's in her class of the day when she hears Mo's voice telling her to go to the tower.
Mo,
I'm in the middle of class.
She hears a second voice telling her someone needs help, and she feels like something is very wrong as lights flicker in the corner of the classroom. She excuses herself from class and runs out to the hall and runs smack dab into Vad. She sees a dark shadow behind him and starts freaking out, and he's like, Corvina, are you okay? What do you see behind me? And she feels the urge to follow the shadow, so she darts after it, and Vad follows her, asking what she's seeing. And she's like, I see a shadow. I need to get to the tower.
I'd feel insane.
She does.
She does, but also, like, this has been happening her whole life. She's also very scared that she's schizophrenic. When she gets to the courtyard, she sees what's going on. Troy is on the roof with glazed over eyes, and Jade is on the ground freaking out as Erica holds her. And Jade and Troy are together. They are an item.
And Troy and Corvina get along really well. Like, she always describes him as the brother that she never had.
And he's just, like, super glazed over. He looks like he's drunk or hypnotized or something, just on the tower. Ethan tells Dr. Deverell that the roof entrance is locked and nobody can get up there to save him. Troy looks straight at Corvina and gives her a creepy ass smile and just walks right off, splattering into a bloody mess on the ground below.
Jesus.
A shadow and a flicker of light appear over his body, and his voice inside Corvina's head says, Purple, tell my brother. Because she has purple eyes. He always called her Purple.
Yeah, that was her nickname with Troy.
Nobody but Corvina saw or heard any of it, and his body is taken away. Jade is taken by the school nurse because she's having a full-on panty. Because that was her boyfriend.
Yeah, she watched her roommate do it the year before, and then her boyfriend do it again.
I would be like, oh, it's time to leave this school.
She looks up to see Vad standing in the exact spot Troy just jumped from, having just missed getting there in time.
Or did he push him?
Well, they saw him walk off.
Yeah, never mind.
That night, she can't sleep, so she goes for a walk around campus. She runs into Vad, of course, and is like, I don't understand why Troy did what he did. And she's like, he wasn't suicidal. He was happy. I just talked to him. There's no reason this should have happened. And he asks if he can show her something and have it stay between them, and she says yes. So he tells her to follow him and stay quiet. He takes her across campus to this building with a creepy demon face door, and he unlocks it and brings her into his private room in the attic.
I was just thinking how funny it would be if he would, like, can I show you something? And then he, like, shows her his dick.
Like a typical man would do.
He tells her to come and sit on the bed, and she obeys. He asks about the shadow, and she's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but he's not having any of it. She's like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be crazy. And then he tells her the castle is crazy and just to tell him. He offers her a secret for a secret and she still refuses. He's like, you said your mom was institutionalized, but you didn't tell me you were also institutionalized for 2 months with her.
Oh.
He holds out a folded piece of paper, which is obviously someone's personal file. And he says he'll let her read it if she talks. So she spills everything about her whole life, the voices, her childhood. And she starts to have a panic attack and he places a hand on her chest, telling her to calm the fuck down and give him her eyes. He rubs her and soothes her. And once she's calmer, he hands her the paper and says he found it on the roof with Troy. He tells her to stay here and rest. He's going to go work out and he'll be back later. She lays down and unfolds the note and it reads Danse Macabre, which means the dance of death. She wakes up entangled with a sleeping Vlad after getting the best night's sleep she's gotten in months. She sneaks out and runs straight into Kaylin, who is the recruiter who sent her the acceptance letter for the school. And Kaylin is like, why were you in the faculty wing? And Corvina lies and says she was just going on a walk, but Kaylin isn't buying it and tells her to watch her step around here. She gets back to her tower and takes a shower, but while she's washing her hair, the lights go out. She can see now that the light switch is still turned to on and one of the mirrors above the sink shatters.
Oh, no. Corvina stilled as she saw something in the mirror. Her eyes in the reflection slowly turned black, the whites dissolving into the black holes that expanded from her pupils and crept to the edges. Heart thumping, she watched. Her grip on the towel tightened as her reflection stepped closer to the mirror with those terrifying eyes. A tear falling down the reflection's face. I know you can hear me, came the feminine voice with the rotten scent. She took a step back, shaking, unable to believe whatever she was seeing. It wasn't real. It was her brain. But even if it was her brain, the illusion was terror-inducing. The reflection stepped closer to the mirror, and suddenly, the whole thing cracked like something had smashed into it from the other side. The mirror bulging in the shape of someone's hands trying to get out.
No way.
Terrifying.
The way I would never take a shower again in my life.
No. No, no, no. I would leave. Like I keep saying, I would leave.
Go back home. She falls back, slicing her hand on the broken glass, and two girls rush in to check on her. They help her up and back to her dorm. She gets dressed and finds Jade sitting and staring out their window. She tells Corvina that she just wants to be alone right now, so Corvina leaves to try and find a phone to call her therapist, but admin says she needs a special permission slip to make outgoing calls, which is insane.
That is insane. Also, I understand her boyfriend just died, Jade's, but I'd be like, well, I'm so sorry, but this is my room. I just won't talk to you.
Yeah.
After she just had a terrifying experience and now she's not allowed in her room.
Yeah. I'd be like, I need to lay down. So sorry.
Class is canceled because of Troy, so she decides to find somewhere to be alone too, and she checks out the vault and is surprised to find a piano in there. She sits on one of the couches and curls up to read Dracula and eventually falls asleep. She's awoken to the sound of music and it's Vlad playing the piano. When she sits up, he says that he woke up alone after having the best night's sleep he's gotten in years. He tells her to come sit on the piano and asks about her time being institutionalized. He spreads her legs and runs his finger up her thighs, and she tells him that both her parents were schizophrenic.
He's like, tell me about like your mental health issues while I try to finger bang you.
I know, I was just about to say that.
When she turned 18, she got so concerned for her mother that she called the institute to take her mother away to get help. Now her mother has dementia and barely remembers her own daughter. She tells him she hears voices too, one in particular, and he's like, oh, so is that Mo? And she says yes, and he is visibly relieved. So he's like, I don't have to worry about whoever the fuck Mo is.
No competition.
She admitted herself to the same institute her mother was in to have herself tested to be safe, and it was all negative. No schizophrenia. So,
whew, phew.
Since coming to Varenmore, her auditory and visual hallucinations have escalated. Then he starts eating her out while she sits on the piano and she can't focus on the conversation anymore. She just trauma dumped on him while he's like, nom nom nom.
That would piss me off.
Yeah, me too. I thought you wanted to have a conversation.
He didn't ask her any more questions, his tongue diving deep inside her before coming back out, finding her clit, circling it with a skill she knew was both gifted and polished over time. She clung to his hair, twisting it in her fingers as her hips writhed on their own, one of his fingers penetrating her as his mouth wreaked havoc on her nub. Her nipples tightened to sharp points on her breasts, unrestricted under her sweater, her mouth opening on a gasp as he curled his fingers inside her, finding a spot so deep it sent waves of intense pleasure rolling over her body, blackening her mind, her heart crashing against her ribs with each beat.
She comes down from her orgasm orgasm and he rearranges her panties. He stands over her kissing her and tells her he's done denying what's happening between the two of them. But for now, she needs to go up for dinner and he'll make sure her doctor calls her tomorrow. Before she rushes out, he tells her not to think about him when she's with Jax. He'd hate to have to hurt a student. And she's not even with Jax.
They're literally just friends. They held hands one time when they were running from danger.
The next day, Troy's brother arrives and she has a weird run-in with him where he's like, purple eyes, you remind me of someone. They start to talk about Troy, but they're interrupted by Kaylin, who shuts the whole conversation down, clearly wanting the case closed. But Ajax, who is Troy's brother, so we have Jax and Ajax, which is a choice. Ajax slips her a note that says for her to meet him at the lake that night. That night, she sneaks out, and while she's running, she hears a feminine voice in her head asking if she can hear her, but she ignores it and meets up with Ajax. Corvina tells him that Troy seemed fine that whole day, and it's just odd that the exact same thing happened to Alyssa the previous year. She mentions Vad, and he's visibly shocked and is like, fuck, he found you. Apparently, Vad and Ajax were childhood friends at a boys' home and mentions the crazy old lady from the prologue and tells her about the premonition with the purple eyes. So Ajax knew about the lady that was like, find the purple eyes. They were eventually separated, and when they both came to Varinmore, they didn't speak. He warns her that Vad's grandfather died a suspicious death on Vad's 18th birthday, which resulted in him inheriting a fortune. And then Vad walks up. Ajax tells him he's taking his brother and getting the hell off his cursed mountain first thing tomorrow. And Corvina is like, his mountain? This mountain doesn't belong to Vad. What? And then Ajax is like, yeah, the whole mountain belongs to the Devrolls.
Oh, shit.
Then Ajax turns to her and is like, watch out for him. My ex-girlfriend died during the last Black Ball, and now my brother. And then he storms off, leaving Corvina and Vad alone. She tells him he's a stranger to her and takes off running. Because that's scary as fuck. He owns the mountain. He's connected to all these people that are dying.
Yeah. Mm-mm. A hand on the back of her neck suddenly slammed her into a tree. Her front pressed to the thick, rough bark, and she yelped as his tall, warm body pressed into her from behind. A stranger, little crow? His lips found her ear, whispering the words into them. A hand wrapped itself around her loose braid, pulling her head back. Would a stranger know the exact taste of your cum on his tongue? He murmured into the side of her neck, tilting her head for his leisure. Would a stranger know exactly how deep his cock can go in that tight pussy? His words rolled over her as the hand from the back of her neck gathered both her wrists in one hand and held them behind her back. Would a stranger know the way your tits bounce when your nipple is flicked?
It's working for me. I'd be like, this is so hot.
I guess not.
She tells him he hasn't been honest with her and she can't trust a liar. He says he'll earn her trust and pulls her skirt up past her hips.
He tucked her panties to the side and found her shamefully wet, a chuckle escaping him at her drenched heat. A stranger, she says. Would you be soaking your thighs for a stranger?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Corvina felt a flush crawl up her as he pulled his zipper down behind her. Resting her forehead against the trunk of the tree, she grasped the sides of it just as he entered her with one clean thrust. Her body pushed up to her toes, the angle making her head roll back to his shoulder, a loud moan leaving her throat at the fullness. You want to know who I am? He punched his hips harshly against her. I slam, am, slam, your, slam, madness. Shut up.
He tells her he claimed her before anyone else could. He's claimed her body, her heart, her mind, and her soul. And then he bites into her neck like a vampire. She tells him that he is her devil. And he says, all yours, and plays with her clit. And he demands for her to say that she is his. A voice in her head is like, what if he's evil? But she ignores it and says that she is. He comes inside of her and fixes her panties.
You'll walk to your tower with my cum inside you. He eased back enough to turn her around, his hands finding her breasts and massaging them, soothing them after the friction with the rough tree. And tomorrow, when you start doubting this again, feel your sore pussy and remember who owns it. Oh my god.
Love.
She tells him not to lie or hide things from her again, and he agrees. He tells her to stay back after class tomorrow and she'll get some answers. She asks him if he's evil and he's like, if I said yes, would it keep your pussy dry? But she knows that it wouldn't. He tells her he's not a good man, but he's not the evil haunting this place. She rushes back to her dorm and goes to bed. She has a sexy nightmare about Vad and the Black Ball and wakes up sweaty and horny.
Uh-huh.
She goes to class and when it's over, she hangs back like he told her to and asks for her answers. He asks her what he gets in return, and she says her, any way he wants her. So she asks about his childhood. His father paid his mom off to dump him at a boy's home, and then years later, his grandpa needed an heir and adopted him. He'd educated Vad on the board for the school and put him in private school and piano lessons, which became his outlet. On his 18th birthday, his grandpa told him about the Slayers, so like that secret cult that was sacrificing people. When his grandpa was in the school, he dated a witch who convinced him and his friends to kidnap a girl and force her to do things with them. So like, whatever you're imagining, that's what they did.
Yikers.
It went too far and the girl died, but the boys got off in the power of it, and those were the original Slayers. So that's how it started, with Vad's grandpa.
Oh no.
When the townspeople found out, they kept doing it, and his grandfather switched sides and led a group of villagers to kill the Slayers and the witch who cursed him with her dying breath. So, like, as she was being killed, she was like, curse you, Devril! After that, his grandfather never came back on the mountain. When he was a student, he and Ajax's girlfriend went into the woods during the Black Ball to investigate the disappearances, but she went into that creepy shack and was never found again. So the shack where they keep seeing all the shadows and stuff. Now he's like, I get whatever I want, right? But she presses more, and he tells her that the boy's home was called Morningstar, the same name as the institute her mom was in. So when he was doing research on it, he came across a picture of her mom, who has purple eyes, which is who he was told to look for in the prologue, and he went to visit her 3 years ago. That's when Corvina was there getting tested for schizophrenia, and Vad saw her there too. She crashes a kiss into him because he always knew she might be crazy, and he didn't care.
Oh, okay.
They fuck and she leaves, but goes to the faculty wing that night to see Vad again. He pulls her inside and asks if this is a booty call, and she drops to her knees and says, it's an instruction. Now teach me, Devereaux, and pulls his sweatpants down. He gives her a step-by-step instruction on how to suck his dick, and then asks where she wants his cum, and she says inside her. So he commands her to strip. She gets on the bed and he thrusts into her, telling her if she makes a sound, he stops. They fuck and she manages to stay silent through her orgasm and his, and then he cleans her up. They bathe in the dark together and she tells him she feels safe with him, which like, why? Why do you feel safe with this man?
Yeah, that's always the question.
They get in bed and she tells him she's glad he got all of her firsts, and he says he intends to get all of her lasts too, and they fall asleep at peace being together like this.
Corvina had another nightmare that night. It was her back at the lake with a dark-haired girl floating, only this time Vad was grabbing her ankles, locking her in place underwater. The ghost from before said, we know you hear us, and to come find them, and that he would anchor her down. And that's when she realized all of those missing victims were murdered in the lake. Vad wakes her up from her nightmare, and she tells him about it. That's when he disclosed to her that the lake was never actually dragged when they were looking for all those missing people. She needs air immediately, so he tells her that he will go to the lake with her. From his housing place, there's a shortcut that's actually a tunnel system that hardly anyone knows about. There's a voice in her head that she's only ever heard once before, and it tells her basically to be careful around him, and what if he's being manipulative and he's actually truly evil?
Oh my god, so much conflicting voices. Yes. Yeah, I would be going crazy.
I would only listen to Mo. If Mo says he's fine, he's fine.
And she has this moment right before they go into the tunnel where he holds his hand out for her, and she's genuinely hesitating because she has a lot of conflicting emotions. And then she has a bunch of flashbacks of Mo being the one to push her towards him and everything that they've gone through together. And with his hand still stretched out, he asked her if she trusts him. Although she's scared, the universe has never guided her wrong, so she takes his hands and says yes. He does have a little bit of a red flag moment, though, right after this. As soon as she says yes, he says, there's no going back now. I will never let you escape.
Oh, now why would you say that?
Exactly. Like, if she is already hesitant and then he says that, that's fucking creepy.
You're never gonna leave me.
Vad tells her that there's other tunnels besides this one, but there's one that is sealed off. The one that's sealed off is the tunnel that the Slayers used to use to get up and down the mountain without ever being seen. They get to the lake and Corvina opens up her senses, and she heard that voice again saying, find us. Vad confirms with her that he will be there when they drag the lake, and she doesn't know why she says what she does, but she has an intense feeling to have them drag right under the bridge. They get back to the admin wing, and Corvina makes her phone call to her doctor, basically telling him about the hallucinations, the voices, and the bathroom incident. When she's done leaving her message, Vad's like, you never told me about the bathroom incident. And he reassures her that he will always be there for her no matter what, and that she's never alone.
Look at me, he commanded, and her body complied, her gaze locking with his.
I am the grandson of a serial killer. I was raised by him, taught by him. His legacy is mine. His blood is mine. I will never be a good man. But you don't need a good man, do you? You need a devil to fight your demons because you don't want to fight them alone. You're self-sufficient, but you don't want to be. You want that beast on the throne who would take charge for you. The beast who could fuck you raw in a room full of people, gone mad, and still make you feel safe.
Okay.
Riley's not vibing with him.
Maybe that is what she wants.
Could be.
I mean, he's like kind of hot, but he's very, the things he says, I'm like, oh.
Oh no.
Yikes.
He goes one more step and he tells her what they have between them will last until the day roses on his grave stop sharing the roots with the roses on hers. Which is fucking cute.
Okay, that is.
Charlotte.
Stupid.
Charlotte's just been rolling her eyes this whole book.
I did like this book. So the lake is being dragged, and what do her and her friends do? They decide to go through the woods and go to the lake. They're all freaked out and then end up going back to the castle. There's a crowd by the forest. They find out there are bones of 14 people in the lake weighed down by their feet. Corvina hasn't heard the feminine voice since. A couple weeks pass, and her and Vat are definitely lovers, but just in secret. They still have to sneak around to be with each other. Both of them are just not fighting it anymore. It's getting closer to the black ball, and she has a sense of, like, impending doom that something very, very bad is going to happen. And the times that she gets the strongest of those feelings is after her and Vat are together.
Red flag.
Red flag!
Yeah.
All I see is beige right now. I don't know.
Jenna's like, no, that's not red, no.
Vat has to go leave for his thesis, so since she's bored, she decides to journal. She subconsciously writes, "The wind in the walls echo secrets and sins, whispered to me, urging me to listen, and I try, fail, not hearing the death that is coming." If that's not a fucking, like, omen, girl.
Listen to yourself. Listen.
And she, like, subconsciously did it, so she looked down at the paper and she's like, what the fuck did I just write and what does it mean? Corvina and Jade decide to go out to the gardens to sunbathe because it's a beautiful day, and the collar of her shirt slips down a little bit, and Jade sees this huge ass hickey that's on her shoulder. Corvina tries to play it off, but Jade is giving her, like, the fifth degree, so Corvina just tells her that she did start seeing someone, but it's really recent and low-key. Jade just assumes it's a senior, so Corvina goes along with it. She starts reading tarot for Jade just about the ball coming up, and then all of a sudden, all these students and even some of the teachers come up to Corvina and ask her for a reading. Mr. Deverell comes up, and he's like, will you pull a card for me? She says, of course, what do you want to know? And he asks her if the woman that he's in love with feels the same.
I feel like everyone in the crowd would be like,
literally. I would have been like, oh, you're fucking. Both of you. You guys are fucking.
Yeah. But then they're like, no one knows. How would they know? Nobody knows.
How would they know?
She pulls a two of cups, which is basically the card for love exchange and connection. And she says, yep, that woman, she must feel exactly the same way. Internally, she wanted to jump his bones right then and there. And he just says, what a relief. And then walks away. A couple of days later, he left her a note to meet him in the attic at midnight. So she does. They flirt and things start getting heavy and spicy.
Does it give you a thrill? Anyone could look up from the path and see you pressed into the glass. She heard his whisper into her right ear, his hot breath warming her skin. She started to speak and felt his nose touch her lobe. Her words turning into a moan. Pressed into the glass, being fucked by the devil at your back. He breathed again. Does it thrill you? She nodded.
He demands to know if she wants his mouth or his dick, and she was just moaning in response.
You have to say it, little crow. God, he was frustrating. She inhaled. Your cock. And where do you want it? Inside me. Where, Corvina? He crooned, kissing the side of her neck. Your mouth, your pussy, your ass. Where do you want it? The blush on her face was a riot. My pussy. My pussy.
He does just that, with her facing forward to the window and him caged in behind her. They're like mid-sex when she gets a tingly, otherworldly sense. She looks up to the corner, finding her reflection in the glass, but her eyes are completely dark. She hears the voice she hasn't heard in weeks, along with the scent of decay, and the voice says, you didn't find me. I needed you to find me. You're next.
Yeah, that's so scary.
As she has a dick in her.
Yeah, by this man she probably doesn't know very well,
but she loves. She starts having a full-blown menti bee because of this, since she doesn't know if she's hallucinating or not. Like, she's very back and forth because she's like, are these hallucinations or am I truly seeing ghosts and hearing them? Vat is her voice of reason, and he tells her to try asking Mo, since she knows him and trusts him and he's been with her this whole time. She tries talking to Mo, asking for his help on what she's meant to find, but he doesn't answer. As she's waiting, something dawned on her. The black ball is always held on a full moon every 5 years. Coincidentally, every 5 years, there's a special full moon called the Ink Moon. It's the kind of moon she was born under, and her mother always told her about how much more powerful it was than a regular full moon. If the ball happens every 5 years on this moon, and someone always goes missing, and there are 14 people that were massacred on these grounds, the energy must be extremely powerful. Vad is now at the same conclusion that she is. Maybe the disappearances are truly something unnatural. Because each time they're like, it was what it was. I don't know.
And tell people not to do the woods. We tell people not to go out at night. They still do. Not our fault.
Yeah, they're like, whatever. Sucks to be those people. The black ball is 1 week away. She hasn't really been able to be with Vad due to the heavy traffic of students and teachers, and it's been 4 days since she's last seen him at all. All the girls were getting their dresses tailored when a man called her over and told her that her dress has arrived. King Vad got her a stunning, beautiful dress that he pretty much made like the essence and embodiment of her, along with heels, a mask, and a note, because it's a masquerade ball.
Ooh.
In his note, he tells her that he picked the deep purple dress based off the color of her eyes after she comes, and that he can't wait to see her at the ball, but also a warning to be careful. When her and Jade were walking out, Mo spoke to her to go to the shack in the woods. She saw Ajax and immediately went up to him, asking him if he'd go with her and would explain everything on the way. They got there in the shack that was once locked from the outside. So the very first time that they went to with Jade and Troy and all their friends, when they saw the silhouette in the shack, it was locked on the outside. So like a person was trapped in it. There's a huge smell of decay, and Corvina realizes that it's the smell of decay that's always with the voice in her head that says, please come find me, come find me. They find a charred female body that lays on the floor. It looks like she could have passed anywhere from the last 5 years to the last few months.
What?
Ajax starts to voice his concerns about the link between Vad and the woods, and Corvina starts considering if the man she loved with her whole being had something to do with this. But then she came to the conclusion that he isn't possible of something this evil. She knows that he has bad in him, but she couldn't ever picture him doing something like this. It's the night of the ball, and everyone is dressed, and they look beautiful. They have a pact to all stay visible and in sight of one another tonight. Once they're there, Corvina is searching the grand room for her masked lover, and on the third time around, she finds a man dressed in all black standing in the corner wearing a crow mask. That's her boob.
Ooh.
This just reminds me of the Cinderella story where you can like very clearly tell who is who, but they're like, oh my god, mystery. Who is it?
She goes to him and they have a cutesy moment when he warns her not to let anyone else touch her because things are going to heat up soon. Then he leaves to go play the piano for this dance. So like in the middle of the room, there's like a grand piano and he starts like keying away for everyone.
Playing.
Song after song, the vibe of the night started getting weird. The music got dark and there was tension rippling in the air, and it started to turn almost into like an orgy. Like all the people on the dance floor like dry humping each other, there were tits out, people were sucking each other's things.
This is a school. This is a school dance.
It's a college. When Vad finally stopped playing the piano, he got up and went over to Corvina. They started dancing together very sensually, and then Vad moves her to stand next to a pillar. He's tucked in behind her, and like it's completely masking him in the darkness. He tells her that the last black ball, him and Ajax shared Zoe together right on the dance floor, but he would never share her. She can watch with all these people, but no one gets to see her, and then dips a finger along her slit and starts fingering her.
If you make a sound, he told her, his deep voice laced with sex, someone will turn. They will look and see you getting finger fucked by a stranger in the shadows. Do you want that? Do you want them knowing I have access to this pussy anywhere, anytime I want, however I want?
Oh,
that is a little hot.
And guess what? She's hella soaked.
Look at you, so wanton, standing in the middle of a hall, drenching my hand under your dress. He licked her neck. It gets so wet for me, just for me. You missed me so much, didn't you?
She's on the verge of an orgasm, and this part made me LOL because she's like standing up against this pillar and somehow no one sees his hand, but her friend Erica sees her standing there alone and just like waves. And she's like on the verge of an orgasm, so she somehow played off the fact that she wasn't getting finger blasted in the middle of this ball. And she like waves back to her friend, and then she begs Vad to make her come. So he did, and she had an earth-shattering orgasm. So shattering, in fact, that she broke the wine glass in her hands, and now she's bleeding. Vad tells Corvina that the night will only get wilder from here, so he asked her if she wanted to stay and watch or go somewhere else. And she says, let's go somewhere else. And he's like, bet, meet me outside in 5 minutes.
They're literally like, hey, someone goes missing. Don't go outside. And she's like, I'm gonna go outside.
Yes. I know. She's like, I'm gonna leave everyone. I'm gonna go out there by myself and meet my scary boyfriend.
And then Vad is like, let's go to the woods. And she's like, okay.
Two of the things you're not supposed to do tonight.
Her and Vad go to their spot in the woods, and they have a heartfelt moment on top of the piano that he always repairs. He gives her a promise ring that's inscripted, "I will not let you go into the unknown alone." And then he tells her how much she means to him, and that one day that ring will be replaced with another ring, but for now, he wanted something that she could always look at in the moments of stress and know that he's always there.
Cute.
So after the cute little promise ring, they leave the woods, and they go to the new rec center that used to be the dungeons, and they get it on. Then after they heard commotion upstairs. When they get there, they're informed there's been two disappearances tonight. Jade and the girl Roy.
And the girl Roy.
Corvina immediately goes back to her tower, changes for some reason, and then goes to the roof to get a better vantage point. She sees a plume of smoke in the left corner where their favorite spot is. And their favorite spot is also called the Slayer's Ruins. So that's where the Slayers used to go and like do their little rituals and stuff too. Her, Vad, and Ajax run to the ruins and they find the piano that she was just sitting on hours ago is up in flames.
Oh shit.
Then they freeze at a piercing scream. And once again, zero survival instincts. They decide to all split up and search the woods individually.
Idiots. I'm going to tell you right now, if we're ever together and there's a scary situation, we are not splitting up.
No.
No.
Not unless one of us has to go get finger blasted.
Go fuck our scary boyfriend.
Their plan was that Vad was to go to the tunnels, Ajax was going to the shack, and she would go to the lake. Vad is extremely reluctant, but he tells her if anything happens to scream. And she's like, promise. Yeah, gotta go. I gotta find my friend. Bye. She gets to the bridge by the lake and finds Roy, unconscious underwater. She screams for Ajax and Vad and then jumps into the water herself to save Roy. Ajax follows closely behind and they get her to shore. After multiple attempts of CPR, she finally starts breathing. They get Roy to the medical wing and that's when Corvina starts getting worried because Vad is still nowhere to be seen. When Roy comes to, she has absolutely zero idea what's going on. The very last thing that she remembers was that she went outside to get fresh air and then complete blackness. Ajax once again questions Vad's tie into all this because he's still not back from the tunnels. He's looking hella sus. Corvina is riding for her boo though, and Ajax agreed that they would give him one more hour, and then like they didn't actually specify what would happen after the hour, but he's like, one more hour.
And then you don't even want to know.
And then he's actually evil if he does not show up. Also, you're not worried about Jade at all? You're worried about your dumb fucking boyfriend?
Yeah. Where's Jade?
Well, I'll tell you. Ajax's satellite phone rings and he has a solemn face. He informs Corvina that they identified the body in the woods. It's a 5'3 female who died 2 years ago from blunt force trauma to the head and then was burned post-mortem to make the body harder to identify. The dead woman is Jade Prescott.
What the fuck? But people are talking to Jade.
No, she's dead.
Corvina's freaking out. Like, she's freaking the fuck out because for a second, she thinks that she hallucinated her roommate, Jade Prescott, this whole time. She's like, fuck, I'm really going crazy. But then she confirms with Ajax that, no, Jade was, like, a real person. So she looks up to her dorm tower and sees a silhouette standing in her window. Just as she thought, is this Jade? Is this someone else? Something hit her in the back of the head and then everything went dark.
What the fuck is happening?
Riley is stressed.
She hears Mo's voice telling her to wake up, and she starts coming to. Her body feels like lead and that she's being held down, even though there are no restraints. She realizes that she's laying on something concrete and high up when she hears a voice saying, I'm sorry it's come to this, Cor, and Corvina realizes that it's Jade talking to her. When Corvina first went into the woods, she saw this big tree that had a very intricate eye carved in that looked realistic. So Jade's grandmother was the one that carved the eye in the tree, and that specific tree only grew leaves once every few years. And when you powder the leaves down and blow it in someone's face, it's kind of like a paralyzer and you can control them. And that's what's called the devil's breath.
Oh.
Corvina puts together that Jade's grandmother must have been a slayer. And she ended up being the one who was brought to the woods to do the dark magic since they thought that she was a witch. When really it was just the powder controlling people this whole time. Jade also drops a bomb telling her that her grandmother never died that night when they executed all the slayers. She got away and she was pregnant. Her grandma had her baby, who was Jade's mom, and Jade's mom met Jade's father. Only Jade's father wanted nothing to do with her mother. So she used the devil's breath and got herself pregnant, therefore having Jade. The bombs keep dropping because then she tells Corvina that her grandfather was also a devil.
Oh, shit.
So her grandfather was also a devil, and she was the one who burned Jade's real body in the shack because Corvina kept going into the woods and it was no longer safe just staying there and decomposing. Jade is also responsible for Troy's death because he was suspicious of Alyssa's death and was on Jade's trail. She gave Troy the devil's breath and told him to walk right off the roof, so he did.
Damn.
Jade does admit the other disappearances weren't her, and she has truly no idea what actually happens to the people that go missing on the Black Ball night. Corvina's like, so you had nothing to do with Roy? And Jade is actually surprised, and she had no idea that Roy was even missing. So she's like, no, like, I actually liked Roy. Why would I do that to her? And that just raises more questions. Corvina asks why she killed Alyssa, and Jade tells her it's the same exact reason why she has to kill Corvina, even though she really doesn't want to kill Corvina since she truly loved her like a sister. But she has to, because that is hers.
Oh.
But also, like, her cousin or something?
Corvina's literally like, you guys are blood. And she's like, yeah, exactly. Like, that's what would make us strong. Like, she's the Lulu.
Girl.
She tells Corvina that they could leave behind a legacy for their children. And she also admits that she doesn't care if Vad would ever accept her or not, because he wouldn't have a choice. She would give him the devil's breath.
This girl is scary.
Corvina literally threw up all over and then came to the conclusion that if Jade wanted her dead tonight, that she would be going along with her, because there is no way that she's letting her get away with this. Jade tells Corvina to stand up and walk to the edge of the roof. Her mind is fighting it, and Mo is even encouraging her to fight it too, but she still obeys Jade's command. When Jade went to go reach for Corvina's ring, she grabbed a hold of her from below, and at this point, Ethan's down at the bottom seeing them on the roof, and Ethan's yelling at Corvina, and Jade was screaming for help, being like manipulative. She's like, help! Corvina's crazy! She wants to kill us both!
Jade, you bitch.
Vad steps on the roof now and starts talking to Jade. Vad's calling Jade a beautiful girl and asks if he wanted to get rid of Corvina for them.
That can't be right.
Corvina's literally like, what the fuck is going on? There's a voice in her head that's telling her that Vad doesn't care about her at all and that he never loved her. Mo's yelling, that's not true, Corvina. Don't listen to that voice. And Vad tells Corvina that he knows everything that's been going on in Varenmore, and he knows who Jade is, and that he's so proud of Jade and that she's a true Devril. Jade is so relieved that Vad understands her, and Vad tells Corvina to release Jade's hand. Although she's so torn and fucked in the head, she still trusts Vad, so she lets her go.
I don't even know what to think.
Vad gets the Jade and starts stroking her face lovingly, then grips it tightly, demanding to know how to undo the drug. Jade laughs, saying that there's no undoing it, and that he can make her do anything now, and that she'll watch. And he said, watch from hell, and then he lets go of her, causing her to fall off the roof, and she fell to her death with a laugh and a smile on her face.
Psycho.
The moment Jade died, Corvina was plagued with multiple voices in her head all at once screaming at her. Some were telling her to jump off the roof too. There's Troy's voice in her head that said to tell his brother that he didn't kill himself. There are voices too much, too loud, and too painful, and she just wants to end it. So she's like, I need to jump off this fucking roof. She passes out in Vad's arms, and then he immediately takes her to the medical wing, and they fly her to her doctor, Dr. Veda, at the institution. She's placed in a medically induced coma while they flush the drug out of her system, and Dr. Deda tells Vad that she has to stay there for 1 month, and then after, she cannot go back to Varenmore. Immediately after the convo, he called the school and gave his resignation and to burn down that fucking tree. He'd rather miss Varenmore than miss her. We're in the epilogue, and it's 6 months later. They're finally letting Corvina see her mom. The reunion was touching, and although her mom was not mentally there, she was able to, like, peek through for a couple minutes, and her mom, whose name is Celeste, was able to verify that Vad had found Corvina and that he would keep her safe, and then she checked out again. It's about 4.5 years later, and Vad had taken Corvina away after the incident, never to return to Varenmore. They're married now, and he got his vasectomy reversed.
Step, 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 step.
One night, she was in bed going through her old journals from school and put all of those thoughts and journeys into words. She never figured out what happened to Roy, who that boy was in the library, and so many more things that was left unanswered. So she made her own book and called it Gothicana, which ended up being a bestseller. She also tells Vad that after 5 years, it's time that they move back to Farrenmore to restart their lives, and that home is calling. The end.
Wow.
Who is the boy?
Yeah, who is the boy?
We'll never know.
No, you will never know, but I think it could possibly be one of the boys that were taken because they took townspeople.
Oh, could be.
Well, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I liked it. I did like it.
Vad was a little annoying in my opinion, but I think I would give it a 4.
Would you trade places with Corvina?
No. It sounds very scary.
It does sound very scary.
I don't also want to hear voices in my head like that. Well, next week, we're telling Riley all about Flock by Kate Stewart, and we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what this might be about. And this cover is going to give you absolutely nothing.
It looks like a forest, and it says the Raven Hood on it. And there's an eagle or a hawk. I don't know. Or a raven. Oh, probably a raven. I think there's going to be a girl, and she's going to go into the woods and meet a man. There's going to be like a group of people that live in the woods, and they're going to be like bad boys, bad crazy boys. But she's going to meet this one man, and she's going to fall in love with him and be a part of his little bad boy crew in the woods. But then there's going to be things that come out, and he's going to have to protect her. And then she's going to become a fighter, too. I don't fucking know. How'd I do?
Okay. It's pretty good, actually, for not knowing anything on the cover.
Yeah, like, were you right? No. But
you were close-ish.
Ish.
Okay. Okay, I'll take it. I'll take it.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.